Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
Live on air, presented by Ger Sweeney.
Good evening and welcome. How are you? I hope that you've had a good week thus far. Here we are Wednesday evening. Just after 6 o'clock, it's time for the Irish programme live on air. As Dave said before he signed off, you don't have to be Irish to listen to it, but it certainly helps. You catch the jokes easier. And maybe the accent on occasion. But anyway, no, you don't have to be Irish, and all nationalities welcome. As always, if you would like to get through to me, there's a couple of ways. In fact, there's people in this world trying to get through to me for years and they just haven't been able to do so. if you get my drift. But yeah, you can send a WhatsApp message if you'd like to, +34 645 99 67 95, or you can send an email to me at ger@tre.radio. Whichever one of those suits you best will suit me absolutely perfectly. Now, couple of things I want to say to you before we start the programme. Firstly, if you recall last week, I told you it was the 3rd of February. And I said that that was obviously the okay, my voice is rather loud. Okay, thanks Dave for that, appreciate that. I need to turn my headphones up so that that's back. I hope that's a little bit better. Anyway, I told you last week the day the music died was the day that Buddy Holly died, 3rd of February. A good friend of mine, broadcaster, record producer, author, musician, singer, all of those kind of things. He wrote a fabulous story and I got it about 2 hours before I went on air. Thanks, Dave. And I actually recorded it. And I said that with PJ's permission, I would release it. And I did. If you would like to hear the story that was written by PJ Curtis, and just, it was very, very quickly done by me, narrated by me. I have it at emeraldconnection.net. If you just go to the blog section, it's actually the last blog that was there. So it'll be the first one up. And you will be able to find that. Emeraldconnection.net is where you will find it. And thank you to PJ for letting me broadcast that or publish that. And if you take a listen to it, I hope that you enjoy it. Now, another thing to tell you about, another voice that you are very familiar with is Patricia Traynor. And Patricia has joined me over the last 2.5 years or so with wonderful stories, anecdotes. And what we've done is we've gathered all of those and we've put them up as a series of podcasts. Yeah, yes, indeed we have. I know that the programmes are up on TRE podcasts, but we've just isolated these stories with no introduction, no anything else, just the stories as were told by Patricia Traynor. There's a fabulous amount of them there. There's probably 30, I would imagine. So wherever you get your podcasts, if you just search for Stories of Ireland and the Irish, that's what we've called it, Stories of Ireland and the Irish, Patricia Traynor, and Traynor is spelled T-R-A-I-N-O-R. Okay, just in case you're having trouble finding it, but I think you would enjoy them, and share them, tell your friends, and you can go through them and pick which ones you want. There's some there. There are some stories of myths like Cú Chulainn and Ferdia. There's, you know, you've got the wonderful stories of the Flight of the Earls. You've got the Children of Lir up there, wonderful Irish stories, and the stories, they, you know, they've done their rounds for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, but you've got Patricia's little twist on it. So there you go. Just said I'd let you know about that. And the other good news in relation to Patricia is that she has recorded another batch of stories with me since last week, and I'll be starting to bring those to you very shortly. And as they're broadcast, they will go up as podcasts as well on that particular series of Patricia's. All right. Now, a little bit of bad news. If you're a fan of the Father Ted programme, you may already know, but one of the actors, she was an actress, but they like to be called actors these days, don't they? One of the actors in this sadly passed away yesterday, and many tributes were paid to the Irish stage and screen actress Raina O'Grady. She passed away yesterday. Now, Raina trained in the Abbey School of Acting, and she first appeared on the stage of the Irish National Theatre back in 1969. She's perhaps best known to the wider audiences for her role as Mary O'Leary in Father Ted. If you remember the couple that used to own the shop, and they were always fighting and calling each other's names and threatened to hit each other with hammers and knives and things like that. And then when Father Ted would walk in, they'd go, "Ah, sure, Father, how are you?" And they'd have the arms around each other and stuff. So that's who we're talking about, the lady in that, Raina O'Grady, her real name, Mary O'Leary in Father Ted, and Arieshde Gorevahanam Dealish. Right, so there we have it. Danny, that's all the news. I did say to you that if you were listening when Dave and I had our quick chat, that I was going to be featuring the music of Horselips on the programme today. I will be doing that. And I'm going to be talking to Ben Sweeney fairly shortly. Ben joining us for the first time in the new year. About time for him too. And I will be talking to him about the past 12 months in Irish politics. Because the 8th of February 2020, it was long before, it was not long before COVID, we thought we had no worries in the world. We thought Brexit was the biggest problem. And then the general election, it was held on the 8th of February last year. Let's find out what's been happening since then. And indeed, some obstacles they had to overcome, things they did, things they didn't do. And we'll have a quick look at that with Ben Sweeney very shortly on the programme. Our featured artist, Horselips, a Celtic rock band inspired largely by traditional Irish airs, jigs and reels. And the group is regarded as being the founding fathers of Celtic rock for their fusion of traditional Irish music with rock music. And they were formed back in 1970. They kept going until 1980 and they retired for an extended period. They retired, but then it happened that it became an extended period. Now, the name originated from a spoonerism. And I was looking yesterday, I thought, what's a spoonerism? Because only yesterday I was going through looking for this. Spoonerism is kind of when you mispronounce things and don't get it right. So it's a spoonerism of the four horsemen of the apocalypse, which became the four poxmen of Horselips. But the Horselips is spelled H-O-R-S-L-Y-P-S-E. The band spells it H-O-R-S-L-I-P-S, Horselips. Horselips. All right. Now, according to Horselips, they had a limited commercial success when the band was playing in the 1970s. There then was a revival of interest in their music in the late 1990s, and members of the band included Eamon Carr, Barry Devlin, Johnny Feen, Jim Lockhart, Charles O'Connor, and Ray Feen. So that's the lineup, and they were absolutely brilliant. Unfortunately, we'll only get to take two tracks from them on the programme this evening. Let's take the first of those right now. Here's a song that's called Trouble, with a capital T.
High on the mountain stands a boy, but are they gods or real folk? Can't see the fire, but we smell the smoke. We'll take the plow, we'll be the yoke. Night after night, I don't believe we are the ones you want to see. Not a thing will you achieve, cause we belong and we won't leave. Trouble, trouble, I try to chase trouble, but it's chasing me. Trouble, trouble, trouble with a capital T. Down your silver and your gold. I'm a man who can't be sold. And even when my heart grows cold, I'll curse your evil stranglehold. The waves are running much too high. It's got so dark, can't see the sky. But a change is coming by and by. A time to laugh, a time to die. Trouble, trouble. I try to chase trouble, but it's chasing me. Trouble, trouble. Trouble with a capital T. So long away from home, I almost made it. soon be gone, moving on and all alone. High on a mountain stands a boat, but are they gods or real folk? Can't see the fire, but we smell the smoke. Who'll take the plow, who'll be the yoke? Trouble, trouble, I try to chase trouble, but it's just a need. Trouble, trouble, trouble with a capital T. Trouble, trouble, I try to chase trouble, but it's just a need. Trouble, trouble, trouble with a capital T.
Wonderful stuff. It comes from Horselips from 1976, of the 1976 album, which was called The Book of Invasions, a Celtic Symphony. A long time ago, 1976. Wow. And it was their sixth album. They were together since 1970. Another track from Horselips on the programme coming up just before 7 o'clock, hopefully. Well, it can't be after 7, Ger, because you'll be finished. I was going to say I'll be gone home. Right, let's do a quick break. Come back to me just after that, please. I shall be talking to Ben Sweeney about the last 12 months in Irish politics.
Live on ERA, presented by Ger Sweeney.
Talk Radio Europe.
Live on ERA, presented by Ger Sweeney.
Welcome back to the programme. A couple of weeks ago, George Lee made a welcome return to the programme. I'm making another return today. I don't know where he's been until now. First time we listen to Ben Sweeney in 2021. Ben, good to talk to you as always. How are you?
Not too bad, Ger. How's things? Happy New Year.
Yeah, for next year, I presume you're talking about. Anyway, good to have you back on the programme. And the reason that we're here is it was on this very day last year that we realised just how much of an impact the electorate had made on the status quo in Ireland. And it became very clear very quickly that people had voted against Fianna Fáil and against Fine Gael, the two big parties in the country up to that point. So let's look at the election. Let's look at what's been happening over the last 12 months. And let's start with the results. And I think you've got some info on that.
Even from the exit polls on the Friday night, the night of the election, at 10 o'clock, when those polls came out, it looked like it was a three-way split within, I think, 0.1% across three main parties, which was shocking. Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael were the two big hitters really going down through Irish history for the last 100 years. But Sinn Féin had gathered this idea of a protest vote. It had all gone to Sinn Féin. And people must remember that Sinn Féin weren't even included in the leaders' debates that were held early on in this, what was a snap election. RTÉ, the state broadcaster, first had just the leaders of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael at those elections before pressure included Mary Lou MacDonald, who's the leader of Sinn Féin. But when it came down to it and the counts were done, it ended up with Fianna Fáil having the majority of seats, which was 38, which was down 7. Sinn Féin were on 37, up 15.
Wow.
And Fine Gael were 35, down 12. Green Party had a particularly strong vote. They got 12 seats, up from 3. They had previously been destroyed, essentially, after a coalition government with Fianna Fáil just before the crash in 2008. Labour on, I think, 3%. Social Democrats were on 5. So no one really touching the big three. But interesting that it was the big three rather than the big two, which was really the talking point of the election results.
And going into the election, which was held on the 8th of February, as I said, Micheál Martin was absolutely ruling out any thought of a giant, or what did he call it, a super kind of a government with Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael joining together.
I think it was a grand coalition, and this was an idea that had been floated, in fact, by, first of all, the media, but then later on by Leo Varadkar, the leader of Fine Gael, that these things could happen.
In fact, we have a clip of him saying just that. Let's take a listen to that.
We will not be entering into a grand coalition. The people want change. It's very clear the message we're receiving. People want change in this country. They want Fine Gael out of office. Fine Gael need to come out of government. They've been there too long. They haven't delivered on the key issues such as housing, health.
So it was fairly clear that Fianna Fáil were not going into government with Fine Gael.
It's a tough one to kind of explain, because a lot of the parties, there isn't a whole lot of policy difference between them. Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are known as the civil war parties.
Yeah.
You know, they famously had this divide. You either had Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael in power down through the years, supported by smaller parties. Fine Gael pretty much coming out straight away saying that they won't go into part into a government with Sinn Féin. Then Fianna Fáil, Micheál Martin initially saying, look, we'll keep our options open. And then pretty much straight away, within 24 hours of the results, changing his tune, probably after speaking to some of his TDs.
Probably.
And saying, no, we're not going into government with Sinn Féin, which really put Sinn Féin in an awkward position then, because for them to make a government, they needed the majority, but would need to pretty much round up all of the independents, the Green Party, the Labour Party, Social Democrats, pretty much sweep up all of the smaller parties, which is a fairly tall task now. Mm. But eventually, when a government was formed and agreed, it was those parties, Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, coming out 3.5 months after the election, with Micheál Martin from Fianna Fáil taking the lead, supported for the first time by Fine Gael, and this idea of a rotating Taoiseach. Mm-hmm. So Fianna Fáil taking the lead, and then in 2.5 years, in December 2022, Leo Varadkar from Fine Gael, if the government has held, will take over as Taoiseach, and both men serving as Tánaiste or Deputy Prime Minister to the other. A lot to talk about, and at the time it seemed quite shocking, the two Civil War parties coming together and forming this government. They brought in the Green Party, who had their you know, best results in a long time with 12 seats, and had won support there, and don't need that confidence and supply agreement that they had before.
Okay, let's talk about COVID-19. And as you say, it was 3.5 months. The 27th of June is when Micheál Martin became Taoiseach. The vote was on the 8th of February. Shortly after the vote, COVID-19 landed. So what kind of issues did that bring with it?
I suppose essentially it slowed everything down in the issues of formation of a government, if we're talking about that perspective. Talks pretty much ceased. Leo Varadkar, who had been the Taoiseach before the election, became the caretaker Taoiseach until a government could be formed. COVID was in Ireland it landed in mid-February. Officially, the first cases were recognised and spread slowly then. You know, we were looking at the cases in Italy and Spain and how places like there were going, but Ireland hadn't really had that experience yet. Mm-hmm. You know, if people think back, they'll think of the Six Nations going on and Italian rugby fans coming to Ireland in early March. The Irish people travelled en masse to the Cheltenham Racing Festival. Mm-hmm. So everything kind of slowed down, but eventually it came to a head on the 12th of March. Leo Varadkar, as the caretaker Taoiseach, had continued this tradition of going to Washington to meet the US President and present the Bowl of Shamrock for St. Patrick's Day. While there, it became clear that this was going to need to be knocked down. Leo Varadkar making this very dramatic speeches from the steps of a hotel in Washington as he was there on the 12th of March, announcing that the country was to close down on pretty much a phased basis. Leo Varadkar then returned home, and as Taoiseach then later in March announced, I think it was 27th of March, announced a total lockdown for what was initially a 2-week period. But from a government formation perspective, that really slowed things down. You know, there was no rush then to form a government because they were too busy battling this pandemic.
Okay. Let's take a look at some of the big stories then over the last 12 months with this particular government, or things that happened in the last 12 months, because the government is only in place since the 27th. So since they started trying to form it, what's been happening?
A couple of big stories, really. Again, I suppose if you try and think somewhat chronologically, the coming together of those Civil War parties, like I said already, was a fairly big story at the time. If you've taken into consideration the Sinn Féin vote and really how the Irish people came out for the first time really in the Republic to fully support Sinn Féin, and how much of a really an unexpected turn that was. And eventually Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael coming together saying, look, at the time of crisis, we need to do this now. We need to put differences aside and form a government in the interest of the country. We're facing a pandemic. Of course, interestingly, if people remember, before the election was called, that was exactly how Fianna Fáil justified supporting the Fine Gael government.
When they were talking about Brexit, weren't they?
About Brexit for several years. Brexit's coming. It's an uncertain time. So really that same line being towed out. So that was an interesting story. Then that came on, so that the government is formed and that's all going well. Until in August, people might remember the name Golfgate. This was a crazy story. It was over 80 politicians. They all attended this dinner of the Oireachtas Golf Society. With the Oireachtas is the Irish government, both houses combined. The Oireachtas Golf Society in mid-August, it breached COVID guidelines. There was a couple of big names there. There was Derek Leary, who was the deputy leader of Fianna Fáil. There was Donny Cassidy, a former Fianna Fáil senator and the leader of the Senate. Phil Hogan, who a lot of British listeners might know as the EU Trade Commissioner at the time. He was a former Fine Gael minister, Big Phil, as he was known. Mm-hmm. RTÉ's Sean O'Rourke was there. He was one of the biggest broadcasters in Ireland, and he had just retired in May, when this happened. He'd spent a career holding politicians to account. And Seamus Wolfe, the Supreme Court judge, and he was a former Attorney General as well. This really put a spanner in the works of the government's messaging that, you know, while we're all taking these sacrifices, the elite, as it was sold by the opposition parties, are gathering here and having 80 plus people in the room to play
golf. There were people that couldn't go to funerals, or they couldn't go and say goodbye to their loved ones who were dying of COVID or other issues in nursing homes and hospitals. And there was an awful lot of anger at that time, wasn't there?
There was. And for a couple of days, it looked like this could be a major issue for the government and it could potentially bring them down.
Talk to me about Leo the Leek. Where did that name come from?
Leo the Leek is a nickname that Leo Varadkar, the former Taoiseach and current Taoiseach as Deputy Prime Minister, would probably like to forget. It comes from a story that Leo, while Taoiseach in the previous government, had leaked confidential documents about an agreement that they were working on between the government and the main medical organisation, the IMO, GPs, on their salary. He had leaked this to a friend of his, Matthew O'Toole, President of a rival medical organisation. Now, Leo Varadkar would come in later and say, look, I gave that to him because, first of all, the confidentiality had been lifted. It was given to him after the main organisation had viewed it. And I was trying to row in all the GPs behind him, of which the NAGP, which was Matthew O'Toole's organisation, would represent. What was interesting, though, was Simon Harris, the Minister for Health at the time, wasn't aware of this. So maybe for a day, it looked like Leo Varadkar could be in some trouble here. His explanation did seem to kind of tick some boxes, and some people kind of accepted that. Leo the Leek is still trending regularly in Ireland on social media. It's a name he hasn't been able to shake, and it did some damage to him after that was released in October.
Something that took up a lot of time on the media, a lot of column inches, a lot of minutes and hours on the electronic media, the final report of the mother and baby home was released about 3-4 weeks ago now, but it's still going on and it's going to go on.
It will, yeah. This was the result of really a 5-year investigation by the Mother and Baby Homes Commission. If people might have seen the movie Philomena with Judi Dench, that was based on the adoption of a baby from one of these mother and baby homes. They were essentially care homes for unwed mothers who had gotten pregnant between 1922 and the last one closing in 1998. Now, this ties in to a lot of Irish societal history, and it's a complicated one to explain, but really there was this shame around unwed mothers. There was this pressure on the unwed mothers that they might be hidden by their family for the risk of, you know, reputational damage in the community. And more often than not, they'd get sent off to these mother and baby homes. Catherine Corliss, this journalist from the west of Ireland, had uncovered what she believed to be and subsequently transpired to be unmarked grave of several hundred babies who had died at a baby home in the west of Ireland.
In County Galway,
so this is how the investigation started. In the end, the final report details that around 9,000 children, which was around one in seven, born in 18 different institutions covered by their terms of reference, had died there in the years between 1922 and 1998, which is about double the rate of infant mortality in the general population. The presence of these mother and baby homes was really known about in Irish society, but is something really that is still kind of taboo and that wasn't really spoken about at the time. And this report, I suppose, marked a milestone that it was being accepted. The history of it was realised for the first time and really marked a significant chapter for us, was acknowledging that element of our history in the Republic.
It's probably worth pointing out that the Taoiseach, Micheál Martin, did make an apology to those that had suffered in those mother and baby homes. However, over the last couple of weeks, we have heard from people who said, I testified in front of that particular group who formed the report. My testimony was incorrect in the report. Other reports have been deleted, as in the sound and vision reports, the audiovisual ones. They have been deleted. They no longer exist. And I see that the chairman of the group that put the report together refused recently, said she wasn't available on the particular date to attend a particular Oireachtas hearing. So I think this is going to continue for a long time yet.
It is. And there's further issues like the sealing of records by the minister responsible. Mm-hmm. Those have been sealed. So people can't go back and access their own records and see other people's. The handling of it has been flawed at best, if you could put it that way. But
we thought that the biggest story that we would be talking about would be Brexit. But we've talked about it, but it hasn't been the biggest one. But there are some issues with it.
When it came to re-election, this was on the radio constantly. We really don't hear that much about Brexit in the Republic. Now, there are issues since Brexit has come in, such as logistics. One of the interesting things, the way it's been dealt with regarding Northern Ireland and the issues that Northern Ireland presented with the land border there and the different agreements that would need to be made and were made.
All right. Leaving Cert students are really at sea at the moment. The Leaving Cert is the final exam that students do in secondary school before they move on to college or indeed move to the workplace. So what has been happening recently that has messed this up so much, Ben?
It's based on a point system, and then college courses are given out based on those points allocations. With the schools closed from March, unexpectedly, there was no backup systems in place. So it became a big talking point for a couple of months and if the Leaving Cert was going to go ahead or not. Usually it's held in June. You go in and you do your exams there, and it was pushed back, and eventually it became a thing that there would be calculated grading. So the issue with this was that teachers would, knowing their students, would allocate them a grade based on what they thought they might get, based on the likes of trial exams or Christmas exams, summer exams, previous performance, all this kind of thing. But Ireland is almost too small for that kind of thing. You know, teachers are involved in local society. They might be coaching a team with one of their students' parents. You know, they might be served by them in a local shop. There is a lot of societal issues coming up at the time, and teachers saying, we really don't want this pressure because it's too much pressure for us. And then on the other side of that, people saying, well, of course, the teacher is going to give their student the best grade they can because they want them to do the best, and the school's results are going to be reflected. Well, what ended up happening was this calculated grades, but then a following system, I suppose, to correct it, was an algorithm was deployed to kind of level out the results and make sure that it had been done in an accurate sort of way. And there was two problems with this. First of all, there was private schools, let's say in Dublin, where a lot of the families were German and they speak a lot of German fluently, but they had been calculated on kind of a bell curve. So they had had half of the top results that they had hoped they would have in German, despite the fact they're all fluent German speakers and a lot of them are German natives. Because the department, you know, looked at it on paper and said, well, that can't be right. They can't all be getting top marks. So we give half of them top marks. And this is kind of an idea of how this thing was messed up, because that does affect how you get into college and your future career prospects and so on and so forth. So there was an issue with that. There was also an issue with the algorithm that was deployed that affected some students' grades. And it turns out that some of those students had been downgraded unfairly and incorrectly. The Minister for Education, Norma Foley from Fianna Fáil, was a first-time TD. She'd just been elected and was given this portfolio. One of the best entrances, I suppose, but this really did come out as a blop on her copy. It caused just so much hassle, so much heartbreak for students. And the fact now that we're looking into a second year of those exams, I know that the likes of GCSEs in the UK have been cancelled. There hasn't been a decision taken on the Leaving Cert yet. We're expecting one in the next couple of days, maybe weeks. She's in talks as we speak with unions and students, but really there is no backup system yet in place.
All right. And finally, where are they all at now?
It's interesting because Fine Gael and Sinn Féin are pretty much still tied. I was looking in advance of this at Politico's latest research, and they're combining a couple of polls here. Fine Gael, which came third in the general election last year, but had that caretaker government during that rocky COVID time, they're on 29% now. Right. Sinn Féin are 1% behind them on 28%. And very interestingly, Fianna Fáil, who, don't forget, are pretty much the party in power. It's their leader, who is the Taoiseach or Prime Minister. They're on 16%.
Jeepers.
Now, don't forget, they got the highest number of seats in the last election. So it's very interesting to see them down on 16%. Independents are on 9%. The Social Democrats on the left are on 5%. Labour, again, on the left, 3%. And we have another party, Solidarity, PPP, on 3%, and Aintu on 2%. So really, you can see Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil and Sinn Féin pulling away, but very interestingly, it looks to be at the moment a two-horse race of Fine Gael and Sinn Féin.
All right. It has been a very interesting conversation. It's been a very interesting year, the first year. I suppose you can't call it the first year of our current government, but certainly since we went to the polls a year ago, a lot has happened. Ben, it's been an exciting time, and thank you so much for putting so much work into telling us all about it. I'm sure plenty of people found it very interesting. Look forward to chatting to you again soon.
Great. Thanks, Chair.
Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney. Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney.
Welcome to the third part of the programme. I'm kind of half drained after being chatting with Ben because there was a lot to fit in. 12 months. Wow. It seems like only yesterday in some ways, and then it seems like light years away. Anyway, thanks again to Ben for taking time to talk to us about the last 12 months in Ireland in relation to politics. If you would like to get involved in the programme this evening, if you've got a comment or if you would like to get in touch for any other reason, you can send us a WhatsApp message at +34 645 99 67 95, or you can send an email to studio at use my own one, it's handier than that's ger at tre.radio. use studio at tre.radio as well if you want to, but my own one is handier because that one is available 24/7. An interesting story. I was kind of baffled by it when I read it firstly, and I'm still kind of baffled by it. The family of a missing man who were unaware that his body had been discovered, wait for it, 25 years ago off the west coast of Ireland, have asked why his body was not identified sooner. A rather sensible question, I would ask. A Garda spokesperson said that Garda investigating the discovery of unidentified remains found on the shore at Inishmore in the Aran Islands in 1996 had received confirmation that the remains of those were those of 23-year-old Dennis Walsh of Cathardavon in Limerick. Mr. Walsh was reported missing on the 9th of March in 1996, and now due to advances in DNA, a positive identification has been established, the spokesperson said. Gardaí called to Mr. Walsh's home last Friday and informed his mother, Mary, who's 82 years old, and his father, Dennis, who's 81, of the shocking news. Indeed, speaking on Monday evening, Mike Walsh, a brother of the deceased, said that Gardaí had informed them that his brother's remains had been buried in a communal grave at Bohermore Cemetery in County Galway in 2014. Dennis Walsh Sr. said that he was thankful to Gardaí, but that he also felt upset and bewildered as to why his son had not been identified sooner. Particularly around this time, or the time that his remains were found. I would have to say, he said, that I am mad at what has gone on for the past 25 years. Mr. Walsh said that he wants further information from the authorities about whether dental records were checked out and, depending on the length of time that he was in the water, were his son's fingerprints taken. There were posters of Dennis up around Galway, and we gave the posters to Gardaí shortly after he went missing. We handed out flyers all over the place, he said. Gardaí did say that the unidentified remains were taken to the mortuary in University College Hospital in Galway, and bodily samples were taken and forwarded to the Forensic Science Laboratory in an effort to identify the deceased. These samples were examined in July of 2008, March of 2011, and June of 2017, with negative results for a match. On the 5th of February 2021, Gardaí and Mairstone in Limerick were notified of a positive match following advances in DNA. Wow, that's interesting, isn't it? Hard to imagine how a body can lie unidentified for 25 years when the family seem to have covered most of the bases, and particularly with the DNA and whatever advances took place recently to allow for these samples to be rechecked. It's interesting. So I would imagine there will be further developments on that story in the not too distant future. Right, let's have a look at our, take a listen, I should say, to the Irish number one on this very day back in 1966. Now, I know, and I don't normally repeat years, but last week I played the number one from 1966 as well. It was Larry Cunningham and Lovely Leitrim, wasn't it? And this year, today, again, it's 1966, obviously a change in the chart, but I was left with, I could only find three historically that were Irish in the that were number one on this day, and this one was from 96. There was one from 1969, The Lovely Woods of Upton from Sean Dunphy, which we've played on the programme, and Nothing Compares to You, Sinead O'Connor, in 1990. So I thought I've played that as well. So I knew I hadn't played this one. How did I know? Because I had to go looking for it. It wasn't in my folders, so I had to go looking for it. So on this day back in 1966, this song was number one in Ireland. I can tell it's you by the way you knock. So now,
don't you ever come back no more.
It fades away into the distance. It was number one in Ireland on this day back in 1966 from Doc Carroll and the Royal Blues Show Band, not to be mixed up with the Royal Show Band, and a song that's called Old Man Trouble. Nice song it is too. Nice song it was too. Our good friend Jose Antonio Sierra was in touch with me today. He wanted to pass on some information that he received. If you remember last year, I was in Ireland up to, actually it was around this time, I came back home for a week. And I was just heading back to Spain when Jose Antonio got in touch with me to say, any chance you'd go along to the launch of the Limerick Literary Festival programme for this year in my stead, because he was in Spain. I happened to be in Ennis, which was only half an hour from Limerick. So I said, of course, I'll go along. And when I went along, I met Bill Whelan, he of Riverdance, and he gave me a lovely interview. And so it was really worth my while going, as well as to hear us what was going on in the programme. What I see today, compliments of Jose Antonio Sierra, that the Limerick Literary Festival, formerly known as the Kate O'Brien Weekend, began in 1984 to mark the 10th anniversary of the death of the Limerick-born author, Kate O'Brien. Now, the event continues to celebrate the life and works of the author while attracting prominent participants from all over the world. It is an inspiring mix of both discourse and discussion. Following a difficult year and anticipating ongoing restrictions, the festival returns for 2021 in a digital format to allow book lovers continue access to its programme of events. So for the 2021 festival, it's going to focus on Irish writer at home and abroad, where some of the best names in Irish literature invite you to join them from their home in your home, because you can log on from home. The festival officially opens on Friday the 26th of February at 7 p.m. with a broadcast from the Lime Tree Theatre of festival committee members Vivian McKenzie, Eileen O'Connor and Marie Hackett, I'm not too sure how she pronounces that, discussing the history of the festival, the journey that they have been on for the past 12 months, the challenges faced as a society and how the programme responds to those challenges. Now, this will be followed by a streaming of scenes from Opera Workshop's Opera in Progress, Number 2 Perry Square. Now, Number 2 Perry Square is an actual address in Limerick, and it is the headquarters, I suppose you could say, of the Limerick Literary Festival. So it's a moving through the grand and the grim worlds of the inhabitants of Number 2 Perry Square. So that's what the opera is about, and they'll be streaming excerpts from that. All right. The opera was devised by the cast and brought to musical life by composer Fiona Lennan. Looking forward to that. I'm sure it's going to be absolutely wonderful. Now, events for this year's festival will be presented online and will be free, but they are ticketed and the tickets are available from Eventbrite. So if you log on to Eventbrite and look for the Limerick Literary Festival, you should be able to find them there. While the events are free of charge, there is an option to make a donation to the festival should you wish to do so. So, much to enjoy at the 2021 edition of the Limerick Literary Festival in honour of Kate O'Brien, celebrating established and debut writers, artists, books and readers. And if you'd like further information, you can check out limerickliteraryfestival.com. The festival programme then will continue after the launch on the Friday night, all over the Saturday and the Sunday, the 27th, the 28th of February. We wish them well. It's a couple of weeks away. I just wanted to bring it to you early so that you get an opportunity to get your tickets if that is what you would like to do. And we wish you well if you go along. I will give it a mention again next week on the programme, just to be sure, as the fella says. Some people celebrating their birthdays this coming week include Paul McLoone, the singer with the Undertones. After Fergal Sharkey left, after they had broken up for a while, and then when they got back together again, Fergal Sharkey wasn't with them as lead singer. So Paul McLoone put himself forward, and he took over from there, but he's been with the Undertones all through. And he celebrates his birthday tomorrow, the 11th of February. He was born in 1967. So I thought, why don't we play something from the Undertones? And then I went looking and I thought, wow, I haven't heard this particular one in a very long time. Let's take a listen to the Undertones. It's Gonna Happen. Oh, there's a slight little fade in this, isn't there? Yeah, it fades in. It's great though. Enjoy it. Undertones from Derry. Fergal Sharkey is lead singer. We play that today because Paul McLoone celebrates his birthday in the coming week, and Paul will be 54 tomorrow. So happy birthday in advance. Alrighty, let's do a quick break after that. We're going to talk a little bit of rugby. Not too much now, just a little bit.
Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney.
Welcome back to the programme. Into the final part we go. Thank you for staying with me today, with you through until 7. And then, of course, we have the news at 7, and Hannah will be along then with the book show. Rugby, yeah, last weekend, I think the general feeling in Ireland was that we could have beaten and should have beaten Wales. That's not sour grapes. Wales played quite well, particularly in the second part, and I suppose being reduced to 14 men after about 14 minutes or 10 minutes, I think, wasn't it, when Peter O'Mahony was asked to leave. That'll eat him up for a very long time, I suppose. Made Ireland's made that ambition of winning that particular game a very difficult one, an uphill challenge for sure and for certain. But what a surprise the England-Scotland game was. So, by the way, congratulations to the Welsh listeners on a good win last Saturday over Ireland, Sunday over Ireland, and indeed congratulations to the Scots as well, because nobody saw that coming. I think if I was a betting man and was going to do a treble last week, I would have put money on Ireland, on England and on France winning. I think France is the only one that would have worked out. So the best of luck. We've got a couple of interesting games: England versus Italy on Saturday, followed by Scotland v Wales. That's going to be a really interesting match. That is, because Scotland will be certainly on a high after their win over the English on last weekend. So it'll be interesting. And Wales, of course, will be adamant that they can beat their Celtic friends up the road. And of course, then we've got Ireland and France. That's going to be anybody's game, really, I would imagine. But I think, fingers crossed, Ireland will be able to do it. I see today that Ireland captain Johnny Sexton has branded an interview given by his former neurologist about his concussion history as totally inappropriate. I think I would concur, as the fellow says. Dr. Jean-Francois Chamont, the specialist who recommended Sexton's 12-week break from the game in 2014, suggested on a radio station, RMC, that Sexton has suffered 30 concussions, 3-0, in his career, a figure that he has since distanced himself from. More on that in a minute. Speaking from Ireland's training base today, where he is still restricted by return to play protocols before he can resume team training, Sexton responded angrily to the neurologist's view. In quotations, "I thought there was a patient-doctor confidentiality. I'm pretty sure that exists in the world. And I just can't get over the fact that someone thought it was appropriate to say things that weren't even accurate. That's the most hurtful thing," said Johnny Sexton. About 2 hours ago today, Dr. Chamont moved to clarify the remark about Sexton, saying in a statement through RMC, "As regards Sexton, we cannot say for certain that he has had 30 concussions. I should never have cited this figure without any explanation, and I regret the wrong I have done to the player who was my patient and who I respect more than anyone." So there we go. Interesting times, as the man says. Our featured artist on the programme today is that wonderful Celtic rock band, Horselips. They got together in 1970 and they put some wonderful music together. They're back on the road again since the late 1990s and they're doing bits and pieces. But this one is taken from an album that's called The Man Who Built America. In fact, it's the title track from the album, released in 1978. It was their eighth album. Let's take a listen to the wonderful title track.
Golden nails that hold together the silver bars, then one day gonna take us to the stars, 'cause he's the man who built America. See him walking that golden wire, a million miles from his starting place, to see the world reflected in his face, 'cause he's the man who built America. You call it kids on the children of the sun. He's fallen to you, each and every one, 'cause he's the man who built America.
Yeah, brilliant stuff, isn't it, from our featured artists on the programme today. That's Horseclips and The Man Who Built America from the album of the same name from 1978. When I was looking at albums and things like that, it reminded me when I started off in radio, and indeed even up to maybe 10, 15 years ago. Now, when I started in radio, it was 40 years ago. You had to kind of wind the radio up. But we used to say things like that. We used to say, here's a track from, you know, such and such, like Horseclips, and here's a track from the album such and such from whatever year, and here's the second track or third track on side one or two, and we used to give information about them. Yeah, but they don't do that anymore. You're getting old, Jer, that's all. Right, we're nearly out of time. I have a time to give you this story. I'll try. I'll get it as fast as I can. There are indications that staycation holidays will be a big feature of the summer once again in Ireland this year. Holiday rentals and coastal areas, particularly along the Wild Atlantic Way on the West Coast, are seeing a big increase in bookings already. However, the lack of international visitors could make this year far worse than 2020 for some hotel owners, who say they simply cannot sustain 2 years in a row of big losses. Now, a man called Stephen Thomas runs Lahinch Property Management for the past number of years, managing over 50 rental homes and apartments in the popular seaside town in North Clare, and a beautiful spot it is too. And he has said that they have been very busy with bookings in recent weeks, with lots of inquiries about the summer. It looks like there will be plenty of staycations again this year. People are being very persistent, literally begging us for bookings, with people very anxious to confirm holiday lets for this year in July and August. It doesn't matter how many houses I have, we could fill them many times over, he said. Well, there you go. That's nice, I suppose, for the local economy. And good news indeed. Bad news for airports and airlines, and maybe indeed destinations like Spain, where people would traditionally be flocking to. But let's see, because later on in the summer, a lot of us will have had our vaccinations. We'll be able to travel more freely. Things might be just a little bit different. We'll hope for the best. Right, that is my lot for today. I'll be back with you again next week, hopefully, all being well, between 6 and 7 for another live on air. Can I say thank you to Ben Sweeney for popping in to talk to us today about Irish politics in the last 12 months in Ireland. Can I say thanks, as always, to our Spanish-Irish cultural advisor, Jose Antonio Sierra, for the work that he does for the programme on an ongoing basis. And most especially, thank you for listening. Do hope you've enjoyed the programme. Look forward to your company next week. Stand by for news, and then Hannah from Meet Your Sweeney.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this programme, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.